Kansas City. Are you ready?
Placement down. Bass's kick is up. And the kick is no good! Jackson throws deep middle for the end zone. Intercepted! Intercepted in the end zone! Intercepted by Deion Bush! Play action fake. Right side throw! Touchdown! Kansas City! McCole Hardman! McCole Hardman!
The back-to-back Super Bowl champions play right here. Your new home for Chiefs football is 96.5 The Fan.
Hours until the Chiefs game starts. Chiefs Texans tomorrow afternoon at 3:30 at Arrowhead Stadium. Looking at a tweet here from Mark Pelos, sports reporter for KCTV5. There's already people at the gate tailgating at Arrowhead Stadium. Gonna be there overnight getting geared up for a chance for the Chiefs to go to their seventh consecutive AFC championship game. That's the beauty of Chiefs Kingdom, folks. Absolutely bought in. You know, I worked down in Springfield for about 4 years before coming back up to this area where I grew up. And I used to tell folks all the time, you know, where are you from? Oh, I'm from Kansas City. And immediately people are like, oh, you know, Chiefs, Patrick Mahomes, Royals, you know, oh, where's your favorite barbecue place? Where's the best barbecue in Kansas City? And I've always said the best barbecue in Kansas City, the best barbecue in the world, is the parking lot at Arrowhead Stadium on a Sunday afternoon. Best barbecue on the planet. That's no disrespect to Jack Stack or Q39 or Arthur Bryant's or Joe's or all the great barbecue spots in Kansas City. Because it is the greatest barbecue on the planet is in Kansas City. And anybody who says otherwise is dead wrong. And that includes Toro, the Houston Texans mascot, who put on Twitter today a picture of himself with a sign that says Texas barbecue greater than KC barbecue. Absolutely not. You are out of your mind. Nobody wants to eat that straight out of the dumpster level barbecue you got, Texas. Relax. Absolutely relax. If I want to go down and get Tex-Mex, yeah, I'll go to Texas for that. But you leave barbecue to the experts. Text line 913-586-7965. 913 asks, how old are you? Wow, I don't see the direction this is going to go. 26, almost 27. Born in 98, graduated high school in 16, graduated college in 20, and now I'm here. So yeah, I mean, growing up as a, I'm sure that's in reference to what I was talking about, like the Chiefs quarterbacks that I watched growing up. When I first got into sports and I started watching the Chiefs, that was the era of Trent Green, right? That 04, 05, 06 era with Trent Green and Priest Holmes and Larry Johnson, Tony Gonzalez, and those great Chiefs teams of the early 2000s. And then right around, you know, 10 years old was about 08, you know, the Matt Cassel, Todd Haley, Romeo Crennel years where it was just sort of, ugh, yikes. Talked yesterday about the 2012 season and, that 2012 year Chiefs go 2-14. And we were talking about like, what was the highlight of that year for you as a Chiefs fan in 2012? For me, it was watching Deion Sanders portray Leon Sandcastle in NFL draft commercials. That was as good as the year got as a Chiefs fan. Watching Deion Sanders pretend to be a different dude with an afro in a Chiefs uniform who just blew up the NFL combine and the Chiefs took him first overall. Instead, we took Eric Fisher, who, you know, maybe wasn't justifiable as a number one overall pick, but he helped us win a Super Bowl. So give him a lot of credit for that. 816 says, dude, I'm going to San Antonio next week for business, and all my bosses down there were saying how much better Texas barbecue is than KC barbecue. I politely told him that they were out of their ever-loving mind. Yeah. Yeah. Stand by that. Absolutely. Do not sacrifice your morals and values by trying to pretend to your bosses. Don't go looking for that raise by pretending that Texas barbecue is better than Kansas City barbecue, because it's not. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise. And an 816 ask, take a guess of who the MVP of the Chiefs game tomorrow will be. Okay, well, I'll go about this from the perspective of I believe the Chiefs win the game. So that is the purview that I'm going to go by this with. I mean, can I say Joe Tooney? But I won't. I'll go ahead. I'll throw out a skill position player to some extent. Man, I really am excited to see what DeAndre Hopkins can do tomorrow. In a playoff setting, for the first time he's played in the playoffs in 5 years, right? The last time he made the postseason, he was a member of the Houston Texans. And so for him to get an opportunity, his first playoff game in Arrowhead as a member of the Kansas City Chiefs, I'll add that, you know, because he's played in Arrowhead before in the playoffs, but it was while he was with Houston. So he'll have an opportunity as a member of the Chiefs to play a home game at Arrowhead. And we talked about it, right? Whether it was purposefully or not, he was under a little bit of a snaps restriction, whether that was because of understanding of the playbook or he was a little bit banged up or the Chiefs were trying to ensure that they didn't have to give up a fourth round pick to the Titans. Instead, he was under the snap count. They gave up a fifth. I think DeAndre Hopkins can have a huge, huge day tomorrow. I do, because I don't think that Derek Stingley will be able to just go one-on-one with him all day. I think that the Texans' likely game plan, and the one that I would lean more towards if I was the Houston Texans, is to leave him on the side of the field that he's most comfortable with, which typically I believe is the right side of the field that he plays more often than not for Houston. And I think that he can have a massive, massive day from that standpoint. If you can keep him kind of exclusively on the left side of the field or let him hit crossing routes, he's not going to be one-on-one with Derek Stingley all day. And if he is, great. That's going to open up so many things for Hollywood Brown and Travis Kelce and Xavier Worthy and Noah Gray, and the list goes on and on and on. So even if he only has, you know, 6 catches for 80 yards and he maybe has a touchdown, and you're thinking, well, how is that the MVP of the game? If he's being shadowed by Derek Stingley all afternoon after he goes out and has maybe a great first quarter or a first half, and that allows other guys to get open, I think that makes him an MVP in that respect. I love your first answer with Joe Tooney. He can make or break the game. Yeah. Absolutely, he can. And I have to say, I don't see him breaking the game for Kansas City. He's been so good at left tackle. He was great the first time around playing against the Texans at left tackle. Who's to say he can't do it again, especially with an extra week to prepare? We keep forgetting about that. Andy Reid has had an extra week to prepare and get ready for this team. So I'm not too concerned about it. 816-985 says, is it going to be a point of emphasis to get DeAndre a touchdown tomorrow? I see him getting 4 catches and a touchdown. I don't know if it's a point of emphasis necessarily, right? They may be, you know, a situation where it's 2nd and goal at the 6-yard line and Andy Reid likes a particular play design that leads to a DeAndre Hopkins touchdown, right? It's sort of a test of fate, right? It just sort of right place, right time sort of scenario. But I don't think that they're going to be deliberately trying to get DeAndre Hopkins a touchdown against his former team. They didn't really the first time around. And it's not like this is a random week 15 game when you've already made the playoffs. This is the divisional round. This is win or go home. If the Chiefs are up by 3 scores, if it's a 34-17 game in the third quarter or early fourth quarter and you want to try for it, sure, you know, go crazy. But I don't see a scenario where they deliberately try to get Hopkins a touchdown. I just don't. Another number, 816-635 says, or 816-359 actually, says, I love Kansas City barbecue, but Central Texas isn't bad either. Texas doesn't believe in sauce. Well, that's their fault. Yeah. I mean, Texas is great, but I don't know. I'm a big barbecue sauce guy. I don't know what to tell you. I'm not going to put barbecue sauce on steak or anything like that, you know. I mean, there are those people out there, A1 sauce is good, and I'll eat it with, like, a pork chop or, you know, some nice, like, smoked chicken or something. But I'm not putting steak sauce on a steak. I'm just not doing it. If the steak is cooked properly, you don't need sauce. But I don't know. I've been to Texas. I got family that lives in Texas. I'll stand by the fact that Kansas City has better barbecue than Texas does. Now, my family grew up in like the Houston area, and I've had barbecue in like the Dallas area. So maybe those aren't necessarily, you know, all that central Texas is what you want to call it, but I don't know.
Someone's asking for one more pick. I'd lean to Noah Gray.
You think Noah Gray touchdown or Noah Gray? Oh, yeah. Noah Gray over X amount of yards.
Just I see him getting a touchdown. You could sneakily throw him in as a 2-touchdown guy.
I think Kareem Hunt punches one in.
Kareem could easily take a touchdown in for the Chiefs. I mean, we haven't seen Pacheco back to his full snap count, but you know, Kareem Hunt's kind of turned into the goal line back. He was mm-hmm. that. He was that for even Nick Chubb, the quote unquote goal line back. But I like a sneaky either Mahomes rushing touchdown or Noah Gray.
I don't necessarily mind. I would probably lean more Kareem Hunt, at least from my view. I definitely see a scenario where the Chiefs end up in a second and goal from the 2 or a third and goal from the 1 situation tomorrow, and they're going to lean on Kareem Hunt to be that guy in short yardage spots because he fits that mold a little bit better. I feel like it has been talked about to some extent. You know, Pacheco is more of an effective first and long, second and medium, third and medium runner. Kareem Hunt, when you need a yard, when you need 2 yards on a 3rd and 1 or a 4th and 1 or a 3rd and 3 and you want to run the football, Kareem Hunt is the more effective back in that situation. I think he is just more of a load in between the tackles than Isaiah Pacheco is from that extent. Pacheco, he's got lateral, you know, maybe not lateral quickness, but he's got north-south quickness where he can make things happen when he gets outside the tackles and he gets himself in space one-on-one with a linebacker. I just don't in those short yardage sets where the you know they load the box up. You got 20 bodies within 3 yards of the line of scrimmage there. It's so, you know, just so much humanity in the middle there. Kareem Hunt's the guy in that spot, and I definitely see a scenario where the Chiefs have to lean on him in a goal to go situation to punch one in. But I don't dislike the possibility of Noah Gray tomorrow. No question about it.
I just think Travis Kelce is going to draw so much attention because everybody's like, oh, does he have one more run in him? Because I've seen that post kind of going around, and it's like, oh, well, the Texans may double. I mean, he always gets double teamed, but, you know, double team jam him, and then it's like, oh, there's the backup tight end or the unsung hero, kind of like the Mark Andrews, Isaiah Likely, where even with Andrews healthy, Likely was popping off for a couple weeks, and it's like, well, you know, you could see Noah Gray splitting the safeties and catching one, you know, 35-yarder.
It could definitely happen, no doubt about it. Again, our text number, 913-586-7965. A lot more messages to get to. I do want to talk about this college football playoff national championship game. I feel like I've been teasing it for like 2 hours. I got to get to this. So we'll do that when we come back. You're listening to After Hours with Logan Weber, our producer for tonight's show, Jacob Mustard, on your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5 The Fan. After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. We've been talking a lot of postseason football. Obviously, Chiefs-Texans tomorrow afternoon. You've got, you know, Lions, Commanders, Eagles, Rams, and Bills, Ravens. But there is a college football game that is going to take place on Monday. I know we're still a few days away from that, but as a college football fan, I am very, very excited about this matchup. Ohio State, Notre Dame for the college football playoff national championship from Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. Buckeyes are 8.5-point favorites in this game, and I think that is a really strong line for this one. I like Ohio State in this game. I think that the Buckeyes do win it. Ryan Day gets that national championship and gets all these people from breathing down his neck, talking about he couldn't win the big one and this and that and the other. You know, all the turmoil surrounding the Oregon loss and then, of course, the Michigan loss that, you know, had people saying like, oh, is Ryan Day going to get fired? You know, blah, 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 blah. Well, what do? They go win 3 games and they end up in the college football playoff national championship. I've been very, very impressed with Notre Dame this year, especially their resiliency, the way they bounce back after losing a game to a, you know, mediocre Northern Illinois team that nobody really saw coming. And they responded in all the right ways. Marcus Freeman has got his team bought in. I think that he is a tremendous, tremendous head coach, a guy that really gets the best out of his guys. I mean, he's a tremendous individual from the standpoint of he has kind of dampened my dislike of Notre Dame football. I'm beginning to realize, as many have and kind of been vocal about it via social media, I'm beginning to realize that maybe some of my hatred towards Notre Dame was just that I didn't like Brian Kelly. I don't know. But Marcus Freeman showing up and being the head honcho of this Notre Dame Fighting Irish football team has kind of changed my perspective on Notre Dame. You know, Riley Leonard has done a really good job for the Fighting Irish this year, and they've got, you know, they've got a quality running game, no question about it. I mean, Anais Williams, along with Jeremiah Love, those two guys in the backfield have provided a lot for Notre Dame, but I just think Ohio State's too talented. I mean, Emeka Abuka, Jeremiah Smith, you've got Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson in the backfield. Will Howard can make plays with his arm and with his feet, and then that defense, which is the best in college football. It helps when you got a $20 million payroll, right? Certainly does. That's been widely talked about. But I said at the beginning of the year that I thought Ohio State was the best team in college football. And they had a few hiccups. Yes, absolutely. This is a team, these are two teams, most likely, you know. If you're talking about a top four, if this was the four-team format for the college football playoff, These two teams might not have gotten in to that four-team format. Ohio State definitely wouldn't have gotten in. And Notre Dame, maybe. But with the Northern Illinois loss, I think they would have had a tough time. But that doesn't mean that these weren't the two best teams in college football. And I love the way that this matchup features one another. You know, Ohio State, Notre Dame, two of the more premier programs in the history of college football. But neither one of which has had, you know, national championship level success for some time. Of course, last time Ohio State won a national championship was 2015 under Urban Meyer, so 10 years ago, and it has been a minute for Notre Dame football. And to see a program like Notre Dame get to this point after so much has been said about them since the college football playoff era began with the four-team format, right? They kept getting to a college football playoff. And then they would inevitably get boat raced by a Georgia or an Alabama or an Ohio State or an Oklahoma or an Oregon. They just could not get out of their own way when they got to the college football playoff. This year, they answered all those questions and more. And some of that, I think, can be attributed to, you know, NIL and the transfer portal, which I know there's going to be folks who are in proponents of it and folks who are outspoken opponents of it. But I believe that NIL and the transfer portal has created somewhat of a level playing field where, you know, you saw an Arizona State program really take Texas and made a game out of it. You saw Texas lose to Notre Dame. You saw Ohio State able to go back and beat Oregon the second time around. You saw Penn State go down. You know, you're seeing all these teams be highly competitive in the college football playoff versus, you know, a few seasons ago where it was sort of like, okay, is it Georgia or is it Alabama? Because it's not going to be anybody else. And I think that there's a certain beauty to that and to some extent. Now, are there problems with NIL and the transfer portal? Yes, I'll be the first one to say that. It's not a perfect system. It's the Wild West out there. You know, this report earlier today that came out of a defensive back from Wisconsin who is transferring to Miami. He withdrew as a student from the University of Wisconsin and enrolled at the University of Miami and did not enter the transfer portal. How are you able to transfer without entering the transfer portal? How does that work? So yeah, there are problems with it. It is the Wild West to some extent, and there needs to be some guardrails or parameters put in place to kind of rectify this thing and kind of get it going in the right direction. But I think that NIL, certainly NIL, and the transfer portal were a step in the right direction. We live in a capitalist society, folks. You go where your services are going to earn you the most. And college athletes for the longest time were earning millions and millions of dollars for others, but not for themselves. Now they have that opportunity. They have every right to go out and search for the top dollar for their services, as we all do in any profession in the United States. That's the society that we live in. Is it the college athletics that you grew up watching or I grew up watching? No, that doesn't mean that it's wrong. It's just different. Adapt or die. Change is going to come whether you like it or not, and you got to get with the times. Just the nature of the beast. Taking a look at the text line, got an 816 saying, hey, if you want a really good barbecue sauce, it's called Blues Hog Raspberry Chipotle. There is a lot happening in that sentence. Blues Hog Raspberry Chipotle. I'm not going to say it sounds bad. That sounds phenomenal. Huge raspberry guy. I'm assuming Blues Hog is like the name, that's the brand, and then it's Raspberry Chipotle Barbecue Sauce. I could give it a shot. I'm willing to try it. Absolutely. I mean, I kind of lean towards like Sweet Baby Ray's or Joe's barbecue sauce, but you know, if it can be better, I'm willing to try anything. Gigantic barbecue sauce guy. Especially like you get me like burn-ins, pulled pork. Throw some barbecue sauce on a pulled pork sandwich. I am an absolute sucker for that kind of food. 913 in the text line. Again, our number is 913-586-7965 if you want to send us a message in about the half hour that we've got left here. It says, a Mahomes touchdown does feel kind of right. Is that in reference to a Mahomes rushing touchdown?
Yes, that would be rushing touchdown.
Okay, because I got to say, I mean, a Mahomes passing touchdown seems like a very obvious scenario. So Mahomes rushing touchdown, I could see it. He has a tendency to tuck it away and get something going a little bit more. Throughout his college, you know, throughout the postseason in his NFL career, he's kind of, you know, does what he has to do, right? One of the more iconic plays of Mahomes' career last postseason in that horrendously cold game against the Miami Dolphins where he was trying to run in for a score and he cracked his helmet, right? So iconic. So, yeah, when it matters the most in a win or go home scenario, he's got eight career postseason interceptions. I was trying to look for his postseason rushing numbers. In his career, he's got 5 postseason rushing touchdowns. Now, he hasn't run for a touchdown in the playoffs since 2021. So, it's been a couple of years since he punched one in.
Means he's due.
It could mean he's due, but is he due against the Texans? Or could he be due next week if they get to the AFC Championship game? Or 2 weeks after that if it's a Super Bowl?
He is just known to use his legs more in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. It's just something that's become a trend or has been a trend, and it's just something to notice.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he's got 90 career rushing attempts in the playoffs over the course of, you know, 6 years and 18 games. He's got 432 rushing attempts in his NFL career, so he does run the ball slightly more, at least by average. He runs the ball a little bit more in the playoffs than he does during the regular season. 816-541 says, Sweet Baby Ray's ? Man, you're about to get cooked. I know. It's super. It's basic. I get it. All right. That was just what was in the fridge growing up. Sue me. All right. Take it up with Mr. and Mrs. Weber. All right. Take it up with my parents who always, you know, they provided Sweet Baby Ray's barbecue sauce in the fridge. I had no bearing. I didn't make any money. I didn't pay the bills. I couldn't decide what barbecue sauce we could or couldn't utilize at our house. I'll tell you, I don't keep Sweet Baby Ray's in my fridge at home now, right? Now that I'm an adult and I have my own money. But yeah, I mean, you know, if you're upset about the Sweet Baby Ray's, I apologize. But take that up with my parents, all right? They were the ones who raised me incorrectly, at least in your purview. This is After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. About a half hour left in our program here. We got some big news coming down the pike from college basketball, which I think is very, very exciting if you're a fan of collegiate basketball. Huge news surrounding one Dick Vitale that we'll get to when we come back right here on 96.5 The Fan. Ladies and gentlemen, Dickie V is back. I'm pumped. As a guy who grew up watching college basketball, there was nothing better than sitting down to watch an ESPN game and hearing the voice of Dick Vitale make its way through the television speaker. Dick Vitale's been through a tumultuous journey. You know, he's 85 years old, and in the last 3.5 years, he has had 4 separate cancer diagnoses. 4. Including in this last year, you know, summer of last year, he had, you know, cancer in his lymph node in his neck, had surgery, you know, went through chemo and radiation. And then just, you know, a couple weeks ago, January 8th, he announced that he was cancer free. Well, today, Vitale and ESPN announced that he will be on the call for Duke Wake Forest on January 25th. That game is going to be at Wake Forest at Veterans Memorial Coliseum in Winston-Salem. I mean, he's the voice of so many of us who grew up watching college basketball games dating back to, goodness, I mean, well before my time, right? I mean, I think it's 1980, it's 1979 was his first year at ESPN. Right after ESPN became a, you know, right when ESPN was founded and like became a thing, back when they, you know, covered the Big East and nobody really knew who this small company out of Bristol, Connecticut even was. And he was one of the major, major players for that network and helped them grow to where they are now. He's done over 1,000 college basketball games for ESPN in the 50 plus years or 40 plus years that he has been a part of ESPN. You know, he was inducted to the Broadcasting Hall of Fame back in September of last year. So absolutely thrilled that Dickie V is going to be back doing college basketball games in the near future. Another kind of, you know, this is kind of a strange storyline surrounding college basketball. Eastern Michigan has now been flagged for odd betting patterns, suspicious betting. The betting integrity firms across the country are investigating after suspicious wagering activity occurred in the Eastern Michigan Central Michigan game. A sports betting monitor, Integrity Compliance 360, distributed an alert to its clients, which included sports books, gambling regulators, conferences, NCAA, all these different things, stating that a bettor had attempted to place their largest wager to date on Central Michigan to cover the spread in the first half of their game against Eastern Michigan. While investigating, they also found two other high-stakes wagers from two different accounts in a different jurisdiction, both on Central Michigan's first half spread. So some calamity ensuing between Eastern Michigan and the Chippewas of Central Michigan. We'll see what happens. I don't know. The alert also noted that this is the second game or investigation involving Eastern Michigan. Another game was flagged for suspicious betting activity between Eastern Michigan and Wright State back in December of last year, December 21st to be exact. So I don't know. Who's out here placing bets down on Central Michigan, Eastern Michigan? Like, how deep into the weeds of sports betting do you have to be that bought in to a matchup of that small a magnitude? Now, I'm not trying to disrespect Central Michigan or Eastern Michigan by any stretch of the imagination, but it's not Duke, North Carolina. All right, it wasn't the Kansas-Iowa State game that was going on earlier this week, or even the Mizzou-Florida game earlier. Central Michigan, Eastern Michigan? We're laying down the largest bet to date for a sports betting platform for a MAC game? All right. Hey, man. You do you. I don't know. Find that one a little bit interesting. We got about 20 minutes left in our show here. Feel free to send us a message on our text line, 913-586-7965. Got an 816 that says, take your gosh darn sweet baby Rays back to Springfield, Price Cutter. Says JK. I appreciate that at the end. All right. I deserve that. I deserve the vitriol for saying sweet baby Rays is a barbecue sauce that I use. Like I said, it's just the one that was in the fridge growing up. Just kind of ran with the punches. The Price Cutters, that's a good pull. Growing up, but living in Springfield for the past 4 years, Price Cutters is a big deal down there. And if you've never heard of it, it's sort of like Springfield's version of Price Chopper, is how I would describe it. And for the longest time, I thought that Price Cutter was actually a ripoff of Price Chopper. But it turns out that Price Cutter was actually founded before Price Chopper did. So, I don't know what you want to make of that. But it is interesting. A Price Cutter. Wow. I did not think I'd hear a Price Cutter reference today. But you never know. That's the beauty of radio, baby. You never know what you're going to hear. Got another 816 says L Town on top, baby. Go Chiefs. Congrats, man. It's courtesy of a good buddy of mine, one of my best friends growing up, Billy Holder, listening to the show. What's up, Bill? Appreciate that, man. Kind of cool. Appreciate you listening. You know, one of my best friends growing up spent practically every weekend of my childhood at his house playing whether it was Madden or college football or NBA 2K, whatever it might be. And, you know, we used to talk about when we were little, right? We were both, you know, pretty of the opinion that I was, you know, 10, 12 years old, and I'm on the, I always remember being on like the bottom row of the risers for like the concerts that we would have, like the class concerts that you do when you're in elementary school and early middle school. And I was like the only kid, only boy on the bottom row of the risers. Sort of knew it, like 9, 10 years old. Like, I don't think the NBA and the NFL is in the cards for me. So how can I be a part of sports still, right? Okay, I could coach and teach, I suppose, you know, or I could do sports media. And we used to talk all the time. We'd be up 2-3 o'clock in the morning playing video games, talking about, you know, the two of us are going to anchor Sports Center when we get older on ESPN. And, you know, not quite to that level, but good Lord, it's pretty cool to be sitting in this chair, I have to say. So appreciate that, Billy. Shout out to you as well. No doubt about it. All right. Got a few minutes left here. Circle back. We're going to talk a little bit more about this Chiefs-Texans game going on tomorrow afternoon, 3:30 at GEHA Field at Arrowhead Stadium. You've already got people out there tailgating. I mean, that's unbelievable. That's a level of dedication that is unrivaled in this league, Jacob.
It definitely is. And I mean, people have known for a while that you come to Kansas City and you go to experience the tailgating. It's just a sight to be seen. It's something that people from around the world talk about. I mean, you know, partially brought to light by the New Heights podcast talking about tailgates. And, you know, since Jason Kelce retired, he was able to experience one and loved it. And it's just something that's gained some recognition.
No doubt about it. So right now, Chiefs 8.5-point favorites. The total on this game, the over under 41.5. I think if you want to put some money down, I'd hit the over. I would hit the 41.5. I'd hit the over. Commanders Lions, for reference, is 55.5. You're looking at, you know, you look at the Rams Eagles game, 43.5. Ravens Bills, 51.5. The Kansas City Chiefs have the lowest over under of any of these four matchups in the divisional round.
They're going based off of the regular season and with some playoff Mahomes, you know, incentives or kind of keep him in account to kind of raise it, but they still, did they break the 30-point mark this year, or was that the whole running joke is they couldn't score over 30?
Yeah, they hit 30 a couple of times. But they never got 31 or more
game. I think that might be why the total's so low, just because their defense is not expected to give up a lot of points, and their offense hasn't been scoring a ton. So, you know, think low scoring, the weather could affect it. It's supposed to be pretty chilly, I guess, Sunday. Tomorrow it's supposed to drop a little bit, but still be semi-nice weather for Kansas City in January.
Yeah, definitely less cold, you know, a little warmer than it was last year for the divisional round game against the Dolphins. That wasn't a divisional round game. That was a wild card game. I'll correct myself. But, yeah, right now they're saying about 25 degrees at kickoff for this game at GEHA Field. I mean, even if the Chiefs haven't surpassed 30 points in a game, right? They haven't gone greater than 30. They've hit 30 a couple times. So if they win this game 30-12, the over hits. So you give up 4 field goals and score 30 points, or you give up a touchdown or 2 touchdowns and a touchdown and a field and 2 field goals, whatever, right? I absolutely am of the belief that the over hits in this game. That's just my purview.
Yeah, I think the books are maybe trying to take into account this is going to be a 21-24 nail biter, hug the line, or a 21-17 or 20-17, whichever one floats your boat. But, you know, I think that's kind of where their head is at of where this game is going to be, because even though you have Nico Collins on the other side, if we're just talking about seeing how many points the Texans are going to put up against this Chiefs stout defense, it's something that if they can hold Nico Collins in check, who are the other options?
Right.
So it's probably sportsbook line is based on a low scoring, gritty defensive game.
Taking a look at the latest injury report, Mecole Hardman is the only guy for Kansas City that's listed as out for this game. Jalen Watson, he's listed as questionable, but he has been activated, and all the reports say that he will play and start for Kansas City on Saturday. So it sounds like Mecole Hardman is really the only guy that will not go for the Chiefs this week. And then, of course, you got some guys that are out on IR, Rashee Rice, most notably, who's obviously not going to play in this game. For the Texans, there are some injury question marks. Robert Woods is got a hip injury. He's listed as questionable. Azeez Al-Shaair is listed as questionable with a knee injury. And Joe Mixon, that was not one that was on the injury designation until yesterday, right? He was a limited participant, what have you. Yesterday turns around, doesn't practice, and all of a sudden has a questionable designation next to his name. So if Joe Mixon can't go for this Texans team, that makes things a little bit more interesting. Now, not like Joe Mixon was all that effective the first time around against the Kansas City Chiefs. They've done such a good job of shutting down big-time running backs this year, including Derrick Henry in week one against the Ravens. Now, he's kind of figured it out and hit his stride, so to speak. But if the Texans are without Joe Mixon, on top of the fact that you don't have Tank Dell and you don't have Stephon Diggs, I think that it shapes up even more beautifully for what the Chiefs can provide this weekend. Joe Tooney is going to start at left tackle for the Chiefs, which I have been a very strong advocate of this week. I understand that you signed DJ Humphries and maybe he can be the guy, but if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Joe Tooney has been the best left tackle on this Chiefs team all year long. You dance with the one that brought you. He has not given up a sack in four starts at left tackle this year. Caliendo has done a great job at left guard in kind of sliding over and replacing him there while Tooney pushes out to left tackle. That is your starting five. It should be. Until it doesn't work, that's your starting five. Tooney at left tackle, Caliendo at left guard, and then you've got Creed, Trey Smith, and Juwan Taylor. That's your starting five. Absolutely no doubt about it. No question in my mind. Yeah, I like that the Chiefs did that.
It's a very formidable starting five. And to kind of harp on that, Joe Mixon, you know, their backup running backs are nothing to be worried about. Damian Pierce, one of those two backups. But Joe Mixon, it looks to be it's out of caution putting the tag on him. I don't see a world where Mixon misses this game, whether that, you know, relies to the loads of medical enhancers that they use right before the games.
Right.
But they say he was spotted boarding the bus with no limp, no ankle brace. So I think the questionable tag is just kind of a caution, and it's not going to really hold him back in any form.
And it's something for, you know, those of us in Chiefs Kingdom, right? I don't know if the coaching staff or the front office or the players themselves for Kansas City are reading too much into that. They're probably going about it under the belief that Joe Mixon's going to go in this game. But for the rest of us, it's like, oh, does Joe Mixon play? Does he not? Right. And that small bit of question kind of creeps in, and you're kind of, you know, playing a little mind game, so to speak. And you're trying and you're hoping that, you know, maybe the Chiefs start to sort of say, is he going to play? Is he not going to play? I don't know. I agree with you, though. I think in a setting like this, a divisional round playoff game, a trip to the AFC Championship on the line, and a chance to beat the Chiefs, a chance to keep Kansas City from going to a seventh consecutive AFC Championship game, Joe Mixon's going to play in this one. He's absolutely going to play in this game. I'm with you on that 100%.
Well, and like one of the top comments, and it's a fan comment, but they said the only way Mixon doesn't play is if his leg falls off. It's just, it's this type of game that he lives for. And,
yeah,
you know, coming from the Bengal roots, you know, he's helped dethrone the Chiefs before. It's something he wants to do again.
I don't think that was necessary.
Just a little shot.
I don't think we needed to bring that up. But, as I said, couple of big news pieces for the Kansas City Chiefs today. Joe Tooney confirmed he's going to start at left tackle, that courtesy of Jeremy Fowler of ESPN. And then you've got Jalen Watson, who has been out for quite a while. After a fracture, he practiced all week this week. He practiced all week last week, full participant, activated off of IR. He had a questionable designation, but every report out there says that he's going to play and he's going to start for the Chiefs on Saturday. And while I do have some slight concerns surrounding the fact that he hasn't played in 2 months, right? 3 months, whatever it is. And you're just going to throw a guy out there his first start in 8, 10, 12 weeks in a divisional round playoff game with a trip to the AFC Championship on the line. This is your best chance to do it, right? I mean, if you're going to do it against the Texans team that features one really marquee wide receiver. You know, wide receiver two, Whitey really, and Robert Woods is dealing with a hip injury, so he's questionable. He's not 100%. And if you're going to get him ready for a potential matchup against the Ravens or the Bills next week, and then a potential Super Bowl matchup against one of the four remaining teams in the NFC, now's the time to do it because you're going to need him in those games, right? If you get to an AFC Championship game and it's the Bills, for example, okay, you've got McDuffie you've got McDuffie lining up on one side of the field, Gardner and Amari Cooper. And then on the other side of the field, somebody's got to contend with Keon Coleman. Corey Coleman. Wow. What a random pull that one was.
Definitely random.
Keon Coleman or, you know, a Khalil Shakir or whoever it might be out of the slot, that sort of thing. That's what you'll need Jalen Watson for, right? You'll need Jalen Watson to cover a zone against the Ravens when you've got Zay Flowers out there, Rashad Bateman, or you've got Mark Andrews or Isaiah Likely out there in space. And then if you get to a Super Bowl and it's the Detroit Lions, you know, he may have to go one-on-one with Jameson Williams for four quarters. If it's the Rams, you know, he may have to go one-on-one with Puka Nacua or Cooper Kupp for four quarters. If it's the list goes on and on and on, right? I think that, you know, best case scenario might be the Commanders. I think they're the only team that doesn't feature like a strong wide receiver too in the remainder of this playoff scenario. For the Eagles, right, it's one-on-one with Devonta Smith for four quarters as McDuffie contends with A.J. Brown. So this is the time to do it, right? This is the team that you don't have to be, I don't want to say not, you don't have to be concerned about, but you don't have to be overly concerned about their wide receiver too when it comes to their game plan. Now, the Chiefs, you know, for many years we said, oh, yeah, you know, Gabe Davis isn't that much to worry about for the Buffalo Bills, and he seemingly killed us every time we played him. Every time Gabe Davis lined up in a Buffalo Bills uniform against the Chiefs, he seemingly had the best game of his career. Never failed. Stephon Diggs always kind of struggled, but Gabe Davis always went crazy. I'm very much of the belief that the Chiefs win this football game. The more I look at it, the more confident I am. You know, I'm never going to say 100%. Stranger things have happened. I was very, very confident that the Chiefs were going to beat the Bengals back in 2021-22. And it didn't happen. But the Chiefs are the better team. Offensively, defensively, they're the better ball club. They've got more weapons. They've got a stronger lineup and all three levels of their defense. They've got better upper echelon guys, right? Like they've got a better true edge rusher in Will Anderson versus George Karlaftis. But I think collectively, the Chiefs defensive line is stronger. They have a better one-on-one cover corner in Derek Stingley, but I think overall, the Chiefs' secondary is better, especially with Jalen Watson now back healthy. The Texans have Nico Collins, but the Chiefs' wide receiver core is better. Dalton Schultz is a good tight end. Travis Kelce is better. They've got a good young quarterback in C.J. Stroud. Patrick Mahomes is better. And if Joe Mixon doesn't go, definitely you lean more towards advantage Chiefs when it comes to the running back position as well in this game. And then offensive line, it's not even particularly close. Chiefs have a better offensive line by every single stretch of the imagination. Remember how many times C.J. Stroud, you know, struggled in that game. A few minutes left here taking a look at the text line. 816-493 says, I used to listen to Nick Wright in this time slot like 17 years ago. I like Dusty Lycan as well. Glad to have you. Good show. Wow. Appreciate that. Thank you. Having my name, I guess I never realized that Nick hosted this show so many years ago. So that's kind of a cool thing. Kind of being mentioned in the same breath as those guys. Just by sure, you know, technicality, because we were hosting the same show, but that's kind of an interesting one, no doubt about it. Another number, 816-541, says, thanks for the late coverage and post-game tomorrow. Can't wait. Ready to go. Chiefs, baby. It's time to put the hammer down on this three-peat with the Ric Flair woo at the end. No, I am not going to even slightly
do it.
Attempt. No, absolutely. You do it.
No, you're the host.
You're the producer.
That means I would put in a sound effect, not do it myself.
I guess that's a fair point. I've already made a fool of myself, all right? I openly admitted that I use Sweet Baby Ray's barbecue sauce, all right? That is the only roasting that is going to occur to me today, all right? You want to hear a Ric Flair impersonation, you convince our producer, Mr. Jacob Mustard, to do it here in the next minute or so that we've got left in the show, because I ain't going to be me. Ain't going to be me. Used to happen to me all the time down in Springfield. So I'm a huge music guy. I was in choir in high school, I was in choir in elementary school, middle school, junior high, high school. And people down in Springfield used to try to convince me to sing all the time on air. Never going to happen. You couldn't pay me to sing on air. Absolutely not. It will never happen. But I'll tell you what, I'll make you a deal. You want to see me, you want to hear me do a Ric Flair woo impression? I'm hosting this show Sunday morning from 9 to noon here on After Hours. If the Chiefs win this game, I might do it during the show on Sunday. All right. If the Chiefs win tomorrow afternoon, secure an AFC championship berth for the 7th year in a row, I'll do a Ric Flair woo impression. If somebody reminds me, somebody's got to go into the text line and remind me Sunday morning if the Chiefs win tomorrow afternoon. All right. That's all I got. Just got to remind me tomorrow afternoon. But excited, Chiefs versus Texans, 3:30 afternoon tomorrow, right here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports. We'll have post-game coverage of the Chiefs game with our immediate reactions to that performance, hosted by yours truly from 8 o'clock to 11 o'clock tomorrow. But the big key, Chiefs, Texans, 3:30 tomorrow. This has been After Hours here on your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5 The Fan.